Hey, this is Michael Emery. Thanks for tuning into the Slow Baja. This podcast is powered by Tequila Fortaleza, handmade in small batches and hands down my favorite tequila. Hey, this is Michael Emery of Slow Baja, and I'm in Mission Valley in San Diego talking to Stephanie Nissan of the Animal Pad, and she does dog rescue in the off the streets of Tijuana and Ensenada, Southern California too, correct? Correct me where I'm wrong. Jump right in, Stephanie.
You're right. So Animal Pad's an all-breed nonprofit dog rescue. Rescue dogs, like you said, primarily off the streets of Mexico. I'd say 98% of our dogs come from the streets of Baja California. Anywhere from Tijuana, the farthest south we've gone so far is Ensenada, hoping to venture further soon.
I hear Toto Santos has a lot of dogs running around. You want to get down there soon. I'm joking, but that's a nice town.
I know. But the amount of calls we're getting right now from everywhere in Mexico is just, it's insane. And we want to help wherever we can, but, you know, it's been tough. It's been tough to get over there. But we also do rescue from, we're partners with all of our local humane societies and shelters. So we do rescue from here as well and take in a lot of owner surrenders to prevent them from going to the shelter.
And have you had some of that during this time where people are losing their jobs and tightening their belts, and has that been part of the mix?
More than we've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah. That's a tough one. Our dogs we have two rescue dogs, which I told you about, after replacing two rescue dogs that we'd had previously, and it's just such a wonderful thing. I feel sorry for people who haven't had dogs in their lives. I really do.
Me too.
So on that touching note, I'm about to cry starting off on the Slow Baja podcast. Stephanie, really great to meet you. You've got such a wonderful reputation. Been checking you out online. Doesn't sound right. I've been following story.
I'm just kidding.
I've been following your story online, and unbeknownst to you, you are something to cheer in this week's Slow Baja love letter to Baja. We send out a little love letter three times a month or so, and it's always, we lead with a good story, and you are a good story.
That's
which
so
prompted
sweet.
Me to reach out
That's
and
awesome.
Say, hey, can I get you on the podcast? And here we are. So what are the biggest challenges? Let's jump into it. There are a lot of dogs. There's cultural issues. Ooh. There are different approaches.
Yes.
How do you navigate that without getting, you know, kicked out of the country? Is that gal who's telling us what to do?
Right. Well, it's a very delicate balance. So I grew up in San Diego and essentially lived in TJ, partying through my college years.
I went to San Diego State as well.
Yes, okay.
I don't remember
so I don't
many of those
need to
nights.
Tell you.
Yeah.
And so I also studied abroad in Mexico, in Cuernavaca, and then later went to Mexico City, and I really thought I was just kind of never going to come back to the States. So I do have kind of a hand up in terms of understanding the culture very well. My major in school was Spanish. My minor was Chicano studies. I mean, so I really, really do.
You speak the language, you know the culture.
Exactly. And that has helped a lot. That has helped a lot. So when I started the rescue in 2010, we were rescuing primarily from our high kill shelters. LA, San Bernardino, some of the highest kill shelters in the nation were right here in our backyards.
Which should shock most people.
Yes, yes. I mean, the numbers have changed.
No idea.
Oh, it was, I was looking in 2007. I was looking to rescue a dog, to adopt a dog. And I was on Craigslist, which, I mean, that's a whole nother podcast. But I was looking and I saw an ad for a dog that said, this dog's going to be euthanized tomorrow. And I was like, what? What does that mean? Like, huh? So I replied to the ad and started, you know, conversing with the woman behind the ad. Turns out she was a shelter networker, which is somebody who goes into the shelters and photographs the dogs that are going to be euthanized and does everything they can to get them a home or rescued. So, I mean, that set me off in a tailspin of research. I still have the dog that I adopted from that ad. And he was really abused. He was a bait dog in dog fighting.
Awful.
And yeah, and I'll spare everybody the gruesome details, but it really inspired me, obviously. I've always been an animal girl. I was that annoying chick that, you know, everywhere with animals. I mean, I just love it. I protested the frog dissection in science class, lifelong vegetarian, essentially. I mean, I just, I love them. I love them. And I didn't grow up with siblings. My siblings are my half siblings and came later in life for me. And so my pets were my siblings. Like, those were my best friends. So, right. And I'm just a caretaker by nature. So taking care of them and providing, making them happy brought me tremendous joy. So I knew that I was going to do something in the animal world. I didn't know exactly what. So on back to the Craigslist, got the dog, figured out what was going on in the shelters and could not believe. I mean, these shelters were violating laws left and right. Hayden's Act is a law that, you know, sets a certain amount of time before a dog can be euthanized when entering a shelter. And they were violating that left and right. I mean, and the farther we got involved, the more I knew that we had to do something. So took a couple years, but in 2010, I just fired off an email and said to my friends and family, I said, I'm doing it. I'm pulling the trigger. I Googled how to start a nonprofit and I did the steps. And 2012, 13, we got our 501c3 status. We were rescuing before then, but that's when we really started rescuing. So did the shelter thing for a while. And working with other rescues is very interesting in itself. A lot of women that are very passionate can lead to some conflicts. And so I wanted nothing to do with the drama. I was just there to rescue dogs. And when I started showing up at the shelter and other rescuers
and
were there.
And half everyone's age.
I know.
And twice the energy. Because you're fresh out. And
exactly.
You're a fresh kid on the block.
That's right. Fresh meat. Yeah. And when I started showing up to the shelters, this was a couple years into rescuing from them, and other rescues were fighting me for dogs.
Pick of the litter.
Yeah. I said, you know what? We're not needed here. The animal pad's not needed here. We want to go where we're needed. If you're going to fight me for dogs when there's 1,000 more that are going to be put to sleep, which I'm going to go gladly grab, then what? I don't need to. I'll go where I'm needed. Turned our attention to the streets of Mexico. Now, with my background, I obviously knew about the plight of the Mexican street dogs. Didn't really know how to start.
Yeah.
There.
Seriously.
Yeah. And it was slow, the start. But once we got in, that's it. We've never turned away. And that was about 5 years ago. And we never will turn away. I mean, Mexico, it's got my heart for so many reasons, but we call them our magical Mexi mutts is what we call of our dogs from there, because they really are magical. I mean, it's a very interesting dynamic and difference from shelter dogs to these Mexican street dogs, where Mexican street dogs typically travel in packs. So they're typically dog friendly. They typically rely on people for food, the street vendors and, you know, all of that for food. So they're typically, you know, good with people. But they have a whole host of health issues that we had never seen before in the shelter system. But in the shelter system, I was getting dogs that were major separation anxiety, major behavioral issues. Not that those dogs weren't amazing as well, but it's just very different. It was very interesting.
Yeah, you're solving different problems.
Very different, very different. And, you know, these Mexican dogs, you're fighting a culture. Because dogs there aren't necessarily looked at as we look at them here. Now, that's not to say nobody does in Mexico. There are phenomenal dog owners in Mexico. The family I lived with in Cuernavaca, the Cocker Spaniel, every week went to the groomer, came back with different color bows. I mean, she had a diamond-encrusted bed. It was, you know, very different. But then you'd walk outside and there's 50 street dogs that would be waiting for me every morning because they were used to me feeding them, you know, street hot dogs in the morning. So it's a very interesting dynamic, and it's definitely provided for an eventful last couple years in Mexico.
Yeah, and last couple months.
Yeah.
So the statistic that we, you know, that I seized upon and then wrote the story about, you're going to exceed, or you have exceeded, your last year's rescue, your 2019 total since basically the beginning of March.
Absolutely. So last year, in all of the year, we rescued 319 dogs. So far during quarantine, so we're saying since March 1st, we are almost at 400.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's stand up.
Thank
clap.
You.
Let's have a clap for Stephanie and Animal Pad.
It takes a huge village and a huge tribe to make this happen. So it's by no means me. But it's been incredible. And why? The community. The community is rallied. The community is seen, listen, I've got all this free time on my hands. I've always wanted to adopt or foster a dog, and I just didn't have the time. And now is the time that everybody's doing it.
Right.
I mean, to the point where I actually saw a post this morning from another rescue saying, please be patient with us. You know, we have over 1,000 adoption applications, but our adoption process is still the same. So you still got to go through the steps and
home visits and all.
Yes. Yeah, so
yeah,
sorry.
So it does.
We're doing virtual now.
Okay.
Those that'll allow home, sure, but we're, it's very hard when you run an all-volunteer organization, too. It's I've got to be very mindful of other people and their comfort level. So virtual is really has been our focus. And that's a whole nother challenge that we've had to deal with during this. But again, fielding more adoption applications, foster applications, volunteer applications than we've ever seen has been incredible. I mean, and crazy, but in the best way.
Yeah. And so let's jump into, I think you have a pretty neat approach to your volunteering. You make it fun. It's
yes.
a lot of work, I'm sure.
Yes.
It's a lot of work. And
yes.
it's probably mentally as mentally taxing as it is physically taxing when you take a trip to Ensenada and you deal with your partner shelter there, which partner is in parentheses.
Yes.
I mean, it's a different approach, and it's
sure.
it's rough, and that's full of their own problems there that you would, I'm sure, love to solve if you could just be in charge of that too.
Biting my tongue.
I'm not putting words in your mouth. I'm just saying, from an outsider, it seems to me that you've got a great approach where you bring people down, and you know they have a big day, and you get a margarita or six if you need them, and you know.
And you need them.
You're creating some community.
Yes. And I think for me, the coolest thing of the Animal Pad and kind of being a part of the evolution of it and growing it is the community. And we call it our TAP tribe. That's our tribe of people. And, you know, because we're all volunteers, because nobody's paid in the organization and never will be, it sets us apart in a different way where, you know, volunteers that go to other organizations have come to us saying, you know, we felt bossed around or we didn't feel included. We didn't feel like our opinions mattered. And here, I mean, we're all family, dysfunctional and fun and all the qualities of any other family. But we've just have a lot bigger family than most. And it's been really cool to see people come into their own. Through the rescue. So, you know, I've got 15 different directors,
wow.
Which are all different departments within the rescue. And that's been really cool to see my directors grow as leaders and to see the organization, their teams grow. And I'm always pushing them. I mean, they'll be the first ones to tell you I'm procedures and, you know, we've got to put these things in place and you've got to grow your team. It's the only way we can grow. And some of them have been more resistant to it. And then COVID hit and they're like, okay, well, we see it now. We know exactly why we needed to grow. But it's been really cool to see them develop their leadership skills and now have big, you know, my foster team, I think is at like 30 foster coordinators right now. And that's day to day. I mean, those are people every day that are actively volunteering, managing our foster homes, our vetting teams, like 20 something people that handle the vet care of all the dogs and adoptions team, same thing. So it's been very, very interesting. It really takes a village and we're all in the same field. We're all equal. And I think that's a really cool thing too. And it's important, you know, for me to all my directors, for them to be hands-on, for me to be hands-on. I mean, I'm in there picking up dog poop with everybody else. I mean, I'm no better than anybody.
It's lots of dog poop and lots, pee, isn't there?
Lots.
Yeah, that's
of wormy.
That's what my daughter. That's what my daughter said when she was a volunteer at Mudville. She said, "Dad, there's a lot of poop and pee." And I said, "Well, you know what? Get used to it."
Yep, and it humbles you real quick.
You get through that. What's you know
exactly?
What's your first internship going to be like after that?
Yeah, exactly.
Easy peasy.
Very
hey,
true.
So tell me about the bus trips. Tell me
okay.
about how you approach your volunteer work and how that's become quite a thing.
Yeah.
A thing.
Quite a thing.
And,
quite a thing.
How do you keep people involved who were involved and now they can't do it because it's gotten so popular?
Oh, I'm known for putting anybody to work at any time. So
yeah.
The trips are very, very cool. So When we started working with this shelter in Ensenada, I mean, it's completely overrun with dogs, equipped for about 40 to 50 dogs.
I was going to say, bring us the numbers.
Yeah, so they're equipped for about 40 to 50 dogs, regularly have about 300.
You can't see my slack jaw face. I mean, I'm just stunned to hear that.
Yeah. And again, lots of cultural differences, and in terms of the way that they do things is not necessarily the way that we would like them to do things. You know, you've got dogs that have been in the shelter for a certain amount of time, and you bring new dogs in that might be sick and carrying illnesses and thus infecting the dogs that are in the shelter. And it's, you know, it's a cycle. And so we've done some pretty cool things to stop that cycle, because we realize that the intake procedure is out of our hands. There's nothing we can do. So we take matters into our own hands and do what we can. So the way that it worked with these trips is, first, it was just me and like our core team that would go down there. We'd go rent a van. And by the way, renting a van, a passenger van in San Diego, not very easy. There's two places that rent that'll let you cross the border with one of these vans. Obviously, these aren't Hertz and, you know, really nice, normal rental cars. You get this van and it smells like they were transporting dead bodies. But that's okay, because the smell of the dogs in Ensenada is 10 times worse, I assure you. So we were renting these vans, heading down there, loading up as many dogs as we could, bringing them back across the border, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So then we said, you know what? People would really should be a part of this. They should see this. We saw the reaction on social media.
Yeah, right.
Of
I'm assuming
freaking.
People are seeing it.
Yes.
And
like,
saying,
oh
wow,
gosh.
I want to be, call me when you're going next.
Yes. It was either call me when you're going down, or I don't know how you do it, because I couldn't do it. And to those people, it's, we don't enjoy seeing this either, but if we're not in here changing it, who's going to do it? So suck it up and let's go. Let's go save some dogs. So we then started renting multiple passengers or a couple of vans, and having myself and one of our other directors drive with, and they could fill 12 people. So we started doing signups. We're okay, we could do 25 people. And then people could drive down on their own in caravan. So then we were doing these caravan trips. And let me tell you, I mean, we're used to very strenuous days, long, hot days with smelly dogs, long border waits. But to see the people on their own go down in their own car, and I mean, these are 12-hour days. These are, you leave at 7, 8 in the morning, got an hour and a half drive to get down to Mexico. We're working at the shelter all day. And, you know, if there was 30 of us, let's say, on one of these trips, against 300 dogs, we want every one of them to have a bowl of food. We want every one of them to get attention. We want every one of them to have a walk. And it was tough. And then everybody, including the individuals that drove their own cars, would load up the cars and sit in sometimes a 4 to 5 hour border wait. Mm-hmm. Before we had Sentry, which I don't even think about the days pre-Sentry. And people were doing it with us, and it was so cool. I mean, because you don't eat, you don't. So I would pack snack bags right for everybody, because I'm not a mom, but I should have been. And I was in a past life, because everyone gets a snack bag. Everyone's got hand sanitizer. Everyone has gloves. And then I said, you know what? There's got to be a little bit of an easier way, because as cool as it is to cross the dogs across the border, and I think that was a really valuable experience for a lot of people, it's taxing. And so we said, you know what, let's charter a bus. So I found a bus company in TJ, and now we have, it fits 60 people, and well, 56 actually. And we started to sell tickets for these, but just that cover our costs, not that we make money off of. And we chartered the bus and would take everybody to the shelter. We would be at the shelter for, you know, about 3 to 4 hours, ensure that every dog got a bowl of food, every dog got a walk. And back to what I was saying about kind of disease control, we started to do mass vaccination campaigns where I contacted the manufacturer of the vaccines, got an account, ordered 300 vaccines, did a fundraiser, brought them down with one of our volunteer vets and vaccinated the whole shelter. We do that on a semi-regular basis. We've done, for my birthday, we did the Bravecto birthday bash. Bravecto is a 90-day flea and tick preventative. And ticks down there are insane. And so I had a big fundraiser for my birthday, because that way I force people to donate that might not normally.
By any means necessary.
That's right. That's right. And so then we were able to give all the dogs in the shelter Bravecto, which is huge because it's also a mange treatment, off-label mange treatment, but it works phenomenally. I mean, to see so many of these dogs that are itchy and bleeding from scratching themselves, and they're in a kennel where they just have no relief. They've got the sun beating down on them on top of it. So the Bravecto provided, I mean, that was a game changer. Obviously the vaccines as well. So we've done all of those campaigns several times. Right before, literally a week before COVID hit, we did our first spay neuter campaign there. We partnered with an American-run organization of expats that live down in Baja. And they bring out their vets and they set up shop and they spay neuter as many dogs as they can. Wow. And it costs us $25 per dog, which is, here I'm paying quadruple, six times that. And we were able to get 66 dogs spayed and neutered in the shelter, that day, which was just, that was one of the coolest experiences of my rescue, quote unquote, career, is to see that. I mean, it's scary. It's because I'm never in the room when a dog goes under for surgery or wakes up from surgery. And to have 60 of them laid out on a tarp in the middle of the shelter, you know, with their tongues hanging out. I mean, it's a dramatic, I didn't really share the pictures on my personal social media because they're scary to see, but it was so cool. I mean, it was so cool. So with the trips, we, again, are at the shelter 3 to 4 hours, get back on the bus, and we all smell like, I mean, you have to burn your clothes after you leave the shelter. No joke. I mean, in full disclosure. So we always tell everybody, you know, there's a whole preparation beforehand, bring a change of clothes, you know, bring a bottle of water, some snacks. So after that, we get changed either on the bus or at the restaurant. And we go to Planta Baja, which is a beautiful seaside
right,
restaurant.
Yeah.
Which many people don't know exists. And it's such
hard
a
to miss.
Gem.
I mean, it's easy to miss.
Yes. Because it looks so unassuming.
Right.
We rent out basically the entire restaurant on the patio, and they do a beautiful buffet lunch. Everybody, the minute they walk through that door, is greeted with a margarita. And then halfway through, when I give my little spiel with my director of operations, it's with a tequila shot, and we buy everybody a shot. Get everybody drunk, because it was a very emotionally taxing day, especially for people who have never experienced it, because seeing it on social media is very different than actually seeing it in person.
Smelling it.
Yes, and
smelling it and feeling it. Yes,
yeah. Truly.
Yeah, no, seriously.
And so when we first get to the shelter every time, we prepare everybody on the bus, of course, and we give everybody about 15 minutes to walk around the shelter and familiarize themselves and kind of not desensitize themselves, but to understand what they're dealing with here, because this is when they've got to get the emotions out, because then it's work. Then we are there. I mean, it's enjoyable work, but you know, you've got to cycle through about five dogs each volunteer to make sure everybody in that shelter gets a walk and gets food and gets water, which is another rarity that they get there. And the food they just throw on the floor.
So the dogs have to fight for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about a mass. These dogs aren't an individual pens or kennels or any of that.
No.
It's not the SPCA in San Francisco.
Oh no. Oh no. Oh no.
Yeah.
And it's no cement, so it's dirt. And so when it rains, they're sleeping in mud. And there's, you know, 50 of them in one kennel.
Wow.
They do have individual crates stacked, and that's, to me, those are the dogs that they break my heart, because some of them can't even turn around. And they just live in this crate. And that's, again, I'm going to bite my tongue, but it's those dogs definitely get out with us. And I always say it's the best day of these dogs' lives until we come back and do it again.
So it's obviously, I'm sorry that people can't be here with us to see the passion on your face. It's quite clear that you're not making this up.
No.
You are deeply moved, deeply passionate, and utterly committed to making a better future for these dogs.
Right.
So let's jump into, how can people help?
One,
top three ways that somebody who didn't know about you until they've heard this podcast or the other podcast you're on today. Congratulations. Our friends at Tales from Baja had you on this morning.
I told them they should call my episode Tales, TAILS.
Very good.
Right.
What's the top three ways?
So for people that are anywhere in the country, we're, like I said, we're all volunteer based.
Anywhere there's Venmo is the world.
Well, true. But I mean, and donations obviously are hugely important because we don't qualify for a lot of grants because we're rescuing from Mexico.
So you do have grant writers, volunteers working, trying to find money for you.
We need grant writers bad because I feel like the ones that we have might've gotten burned out a bit. Cause again, we're not qualified for, I mean, we're more than qualified, but we, in the eyes of these grants, they're for American dogs.
Right.
Which our dogs all become citizens.
They all become Americans.
Yeah, that's right. So that's tough. So obviously donations are hugely important. And 90% of our budget is vet care. Because the dogs that come from Mexico are not, like I said earlier, not dealing with our typical health problems that we deal with here. Our vets that we've worked with for 10 years, they've gotten so much education from our dogs. It's unbelievable. There's something called TVT, which is a canine STD, which we do not deal with here, runs rampant in Mexico, and it creates, it's transmissible venereal tumors. Ugh. So it creates these large tumors that are only able to be treated with chemotherapy. Chemotherapy obviously is not cheap. And I would say 3 to 4 out of 10 dogs we rescue have it.
Wow.
And putting them through the chemo on a dog that's already not necessarily super healthy, that presents its own challenges. But knock on wood, we've never had an issue. I mean, we go through the chemo, it gets done, they're a new dog, beautiful, on to the next. So we deal with a lot of health issues. And like I said earlier, they're tick-borne diseases. Every dog, so our intake vetting is very different than anybody else's intake vetting. And all of our partner vets obviously know it. They have to immediately get what's called a 4DX test. And that's to scan for tick-borne illnesses, which I think we've rescued like 30 dogs that don't have a tick-borne disease, at least one. Most of our dogs from Mexico have 2, sometimes 3 wow. tick-borne diseases. And if they're very easily treated, thank goodness, with a very cheap antibiotic, but it takes a long time sometimes to clear completely. And if they go untreated for too long, they can do fatal damage. I mean, it can damage the kidneys. There's a lot that goes into it. But anyway, so with the TVT treatment, none of our vets had ever dealt with it before. And they didn't know what it was, and they just diagnosed it as like a cancer. And one of our vets is now like the authority on TVT, thanks to us. And our dogs in San Diego, everybody goes to him. Every rescue now goes to him for TVT. I mean, it's been insane what we've learned and what our vets have learned. But so going back to the original question, of course, donations are huge. Our Amazon wish list supplies are always needed. We actually just had a mom dog get an emergency C-section this weekend. She had 7 puppies. She almost didn't live. We had to give her a blood transfusion. So that was a $5,000 ordeal for one dog that our adoption fee will probably be $250 for her. And now we've got the puppies, the 7 puppies. The next day, a mama pit bull that we had just rescued off the streets, and thank goodness it just happened. She literally went into labor days later, which was yesterday. She had 7 puppies as well. We've got another couple that are pregnant. So we actually just posted a thing saying we need supplies more than anything right now. I mean, we need formula. We need, because the puppy that, or the dog that was in the ER that almost didn't make it, she didn't produce any milk. And that's the thing when you're rescuing malnourished dogs who her whole body weight were these puppies, and they literally sucked the life out of her. Mm. She had no fat, no reserves, nothing. And so, but thank goodness she was with us, and our emergency room that we work with, the best on the planet. I mean, they take such good care of our dogs, and it was so sweet. They said these dogs, because it's been crazy for vets everywhere during COVID, and they said that these puppies like just totally brightened our day. You know, it was a really, so it's, that's very cool. So supplies, donations, and we have a ton of admin positions that can be done from anywhere. On any of our teams, all of our foster coordinators, our adoption coordinators, our vetting coordinators, a lot of them don't live in San Diego. And those are people that are, you know, assigned certain fosters that manage them through the process. We have another division, which is recently formed, which I'm sure you've seen a lot of this, is the puppy selling that happens.
Sure.
On the border.
That's the most disheartening thing as a frequent border crosser to see.
And people don't know about it.
No. And I mean, the salesmen are spinning a good story.
Yeah.
And the puppy is cute. And there's mm-hmm. that window where those puppies are so flipping cute that, you know, you've got your kids in the car. Oh, mom, dad, rescue. I mean, it happened to me, not in Tijuana, but in San Francisco. You run into the grocery store, you come out, and there's dog rescue yep. out in front.
Yep.
You've got three kids with you, and it's pit bull, pit bull, pit bull, yeah. pit bull, and then this walker train coonhound. I'm like, I'm going to give that dog a better life.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you find yourself with three young children and a walker train coonhound in a third floor apartment. You say, what am I doing? So that dog went on to a much better life than I ever had. He ended up in Sun Valley, Idaho on a 10-acre farm. But, you know, for a long time, I was completely invested
yep.
every waking hour in making that dog's life better and my life not so miserable.
Right.
But the pull of a puppy is immense.
Especially
so,
now they're dressing him up.
So how do you message buy the monkey on the surfboard, don't buy the puppy?
So
buy the churro, don't exactly. buy the puppy. And how do you deal with that?
So because of that, we formed our activism wing called Tap Act. And that's really a great way for people to get involved that are anywhere in the world, really. So obviously Tijuana, busiest border crossing in the world. And these guys, since I've been going down there, so I'm not going to age myself, but many, many years.
You're young.
I've been
going there since the middle 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're young and bringing a passion to this.
And
they were selling then. Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
And so it's such a simple message, you know, let's end the demand and they'll end the supply. Very, very simple. And just do not buy. I understand you want to. I understand the pain. I trust me, I get it. I bought one of these puppies many, many, many years ago. And it was from a crackhead. I mean, it wasn't a typical border selling guy. And it was right before he walked into the border. Anyway, I did it too. But that dog, I got adopted it out to somebody in my real estate office at the time, and amazing life to this day. That's not the normal story.
No.
But from somebody who's done it, I get it. I feel it. And now the tactic is these guys are walking along the border weight and putting the dog actually in your vehicle. So they will hand you the dog and walk away for a couple of minutes. So now you're bonded. Now game over. I mean, if you've got an ounce of a heart, I get it. I understand it. And it's so hard. But if you buy that puppy, they're going to go and keep selling. They're going to go get another one from that poor mom. God only knows what condition she's mm-hmm. in. And the cycle will continue. And now these guys, sometimes tied to the cartel, we've worked quite a bit with the Mexican government. And we've been told specifically by them, don't like go down there and mess with these guys. We've at first thought, you know, we'll go hand out brochures in the border weight, educating people about this. And that was quickly shut down of your putting yourself in major danger by mm-hmm. doing that. Because think about it. These guys are selling these puppies from anywhere from $100 to $300. Way more than they can get for drugs. And it's quick. And it's easy. And it's illegal in Mexico. But they haven't done. The new mayor did a crackdown a little while ago. And it worked for about a week. And then they were back out in full force. So the simple message is don't buy these dogs. Our goal is to get on the tourism websites, on the government tourism website, on the local San Diego tourism website, saying just a little blurb. Hey, when you cross the border, you're going to see these puppy sellers. Don't buy it. And here's why. I mean, just a little blurb is what we want. We thought about billboards. But again, we're going to make ourselves a target. Because it's a lucrative business and nobody wants their lucrative business shut down, especially by a bunch of American chicks trying to save puppies. So education is key. So right now we're actually working on a PSA and getting one produced, which we do need help with. So if anybody wants to help us with that.
Yeah, I think you need a by border, both sides of the border celebrity
yes.
that can say this needs to stop.
Yes.
Because I took a deep dive on your Facebook
yes,
thing.
The Tap
there's,
Act.
There's quite a conversation
oh,
there
man.
About people who see both sides of the story yes. and you know, we're not going to dive too far into
right.
the weeds on that, but that's beautiful, wonderful, needed, hard work that you're doing.
And it's just so important.
It must be so difficult, honestly, to change that one puppy at a time.
Very, very difficult.
To see the long term. But
they're sick. These puppies are sick. And so we try to tell people, if you don't, you know, just buy it. Don't buy them, because you're going to have to deal with a very sick puppy. They're, 9 times out of 10, they have parvo, distemper. Somebody just bought one. One of our volunteers who knows better, while transporting rescue dogs for us, bought a puppy in line. And I said, am I in the twilight zone? How is this happening? But I get it.
Get sucked in.
We
get sucked
all
in.
Do this
You're trying
for
to
our
help.
Heart.
Trying to
yes.
help.
Yes. Yes. And you see the puppy and it might look sick and it's, you want to help. You think you're doing help. And that dog had distemper and that's a fatal disease. Parvo is nothing compared to distemper, but you know, so through education and through just public awareness, just even spreading the word that, hey, don't buy these puppies because of XYZ, you're not helping. We have only one time has anything ever been done about this by the government, and it was in 2007. And we met with the agent. He came, one of our meetings, he's up in LA. He's been phenomenal with us and helped guide us through this as well. But that was a 2-week operation and nothing has been done since. If you Google it, and that's how I started, you know, this idea was born in the border wait, obviously, seeing the puppies being sold. And you Google puppy selling, Tijuana border. I Googled everything. There's nothing. Nothing. Nobody's doing anything. And I could not believe it. And so here we are. I mean, we're fighting the good fight. We're trying. So, you know, we've done more research than I think anybody has at this point. We have a TAPAC director who's completely dedicated to this. She's an animal law. And so we've determined, okay, this is our course of action. We're going to get a PSA done. And we're going to, you know, go to city council first and see what we can do. But we've got to get both sides to sit down and talk, both sides of the border, on how we can combat this together. Obviously, right now there's bigger fish to fry with COVID and that kind of stuff. But we really are hoping that we can make a big difference here, because it needs to change enough already. I mean, it's been
enough
going on
already.
For geez.
Absolutely enough already. What's next for you?
Oh,
you're buying a ranch in the Valle and having wine and dogs.
That's the dream. So the dream is to have a sanctuary. I mean, that's when I started
here or there.
So if you would have asked me a couple years ago, I would say here.
And you're in real estate.
I'm in real estate.
Okay.
And the zoning and the kennel permits and the land cost in San Diego alone,
yeah.
it's unattainable for us. Again, being all donation based, you don't have a savings that can't save. I mean, it's tough for something that big. Mexico's the way to go. We do ideally want something in Tijuana, and that's why we did meet with the mayor of Tijuana. I've been in his office multiple times. If we can get the dogs to a facility in TJ, I can have a full-time vet there for, I don't know, $4,000 a month, which is, you saw one ER bill. And they could vet all of our dogs. I mean, I would say we would save so much money. And the whole thought is it would be self-sustaining. I would love to have little apartments there where volunteers can come on the weekend and they can, you know, make a donation, but, you know, work with all the dogs that weekend. And then it's super easy to just cross them across the border. Once they're healthy enough to cross, we cross them. And what we're doing now is we rent out partially a kennel facility in not the best area of town, but we have volunteers there morning, noon, and night. And all the dogs, the minute we cross the border, they go there for a quarantine period. And then we have our mobile vet come out and do the intake vetting from there. From there, they go to foster homes and then on they go. So if I could eliminate that step and do that all in Mexico, since that's where the majority of it's happening anyway, and then cross them, so much easier. And I could get land and I get a property for an eighth of what I would pay here. So I think that's the most realistic attainable goal right now is to get a facility there.
And is that a warehouse? Is that a funky ranch? What is that?
TJ's
What's that
tough
in your head?
Because
yeah.
It's so populated.
And it's ramshackle as well. So.
Well, and so I wish I could show you. So Rosarito Pound, their actual pound, is in the middle of these mountains. You would have never been. You wouldn't even know it exists. And it is a beautiful. The facility is not beautiful, but it's in the middle of this picturesque valley. That's what I want. I want that, even if it's in Rosarito. And because it has land where we could also do host events, people could rent it out. They could get married there. They could do their quinceañeras there while benefiting rescue. I would love that. But in TJ, that's not so attainable because there's not a bunch of open space.
Right.
So in TJ, it'd probably look a little bit different. But at this point, we're going to get what we can get.
And Tecate is too far away.
It's not too far away. It's much closer than Ensenada.
Right.
We just haven't ventured there yet.
Gotcha.
And it's hot. It's really hot. So, you know, I would love to stay kind of in our zone. So, you know, TJ, Rosarito. I don't want to go down to Ensenada or Valle because it's too far of a commute is what we're seeing. That's why we're one of the only U.S. operation rescues that operates in Ensenada. There's a lot of rescues now in TJ, which is so cool because when we started, there were not. It felt like we were alone on an island fighting this fight, and you know, it felt like no end in sight. Now there's a ton of rescues that are rescuing from TJ, which is beautiful. Granted, there's more dogs than any of us could deal with combined, but that's been very cool. But nobody's going farther south. Nobody's going down to Ensenada. And so we don't just work with that one shelter in Ensenada. There's a lot of independent rescuers around. There's another shelter that we started recently working with there, which is amazing, and run very differently, which has been very interesting to see. And then there's a battle between the shelter. Anyway, that's been a...
Well, as you've seen with the folks that are placing dogs, I've dealt with the dachshund world a little bit, Doxy Rescue, and shuttled dachshunds up and down I-5 from Southern California to Northern California. And, you know, I mean, people are passionate.
Yes.
People are passionate about that, and I can clearly see your passion. And I just want to say thank you so much for making some time to talk about dog rescue and the Animal Pad and your work on the Slow Baja podcast. And let's wrap it up. Give us a message to sustain us a little bit in these tough times. People are sheltering in place, and you're working with helping people bring animals, bringing dogs into people's homes. What one last positive message would take us home?
So... for me, like I said earlier, it's so odd to say, but this quarantine COVID has been the most amazing thing to ever happen to the rescue. And I cringe saying that because I feel so bad saying that, but it's the truth. It's been the most beautiful, inspiring thing to see people decide, I've got all this free time. I'm going to do good. I'm going to do good with it. And they're hooked now, because once you get into the rescue world and you transform a life just by fostering, because that's truly, I always say, those are the heroes of rescue.
Oh, it's so hard.
Not us.
As I
it's
said,
the foster.
I failed
you
twice.
Know as a foster.
I failed
fail.
Twice.
And now that they're seeing this whole beautiful side, the amount of feedback I'm getting personally from volunteers saying it's changed their life, and they don't know what they... I'm going to get emotional. They don't know what they would do without it or without their foster dog. And it's... I want to tell them it's... but you're saving their life. And I know that there's, you know, they're helping yours too, but it's just such a beautiful process to be a part of and to see light come out of this darkness that is this time has been one of the most transformative experiences of my life. So I'm so sorry. I'm not normally such a mess.
Well, I really appreciate your passion and bringing this message to us, because it's important.
It's so important, but it's just, it's impossible without the good people in the community and the people, everyday people. We're nothing special. We just follow our dreams and follow our passions, and we let it guide, because once you see it, you can't unsee it. You've got to do something. There's nothing special about us. And to see more people realize that and realize that they can make a difference by doing something so small, even by, you know, just helping us send emails, that's making a huge impact too. You can make a difference so easily. You just have to want to and just ask, see where you can help. I mean, I'll take everybody. I'll take all the volunteers. We don't discriminate here. And we are so grateful and we're so lucky, because none of this would be possible without this tribe of ours that everybody in the world can be a part of. And we're just so thankful. We're so thankful.
Well, I look forward to following up and seeing how you do. And I think you're going to meet your goal of 1,000 dogs.
1,000 dogs this year. I mean, we're almost at 500 for the year.
That is astonishing. We're talking in the end of May here, so we're not
it's
even
insane.
Halfway through the year. Stephanie, I want to say thank you so much for making some time for Slow Baja. It's obvious you're passionate about this. And if people are going to find you online, where's the best spot for them to find you?
So we're super active on social media. At the Animal Pad on Instagram, same on Facebook, same on Twitter. And you can find Tap Act through there as well, which is the activism wing, and www.theanimalpad.org is our website.
All right. We're going to leave it right there.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks.
Hey, you guys know what to do. Please help us by subscribing, sharing, rating, all that stuff. And if you missed anything, you can find the links in the show notes at slowbaha.com. I'll be back before you know it. And if you want to receive notices on new episodes, please follow Slow Baja on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook for you old folks.